Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 132, and I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
I say that different every time, and it still bothers me. We just spent an hour chatting about books and various things. That was not on purpose, but, you know, we see each other, like, once every 2 weeks now, and, like, I mean, I could text you a lot of this stuff, but, like, that takes so much effort sometimes.
It does. It's more fun to, like, sit and talk about it anyway. Yeah. And I really do think it's partially winter, too. Like, you just don't want to leave your house in the winter.
I have, like, very little energy. And
right. Once it gets nicer out, maybe we can, you know, on the off weekends when we're not recording.
Tomorrow and Tuesday are supposed to be pretty nice, like 65.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, and I'm flying out of town on Tuesday. But I think it'll be kind of warm, like, where I'm going to.
That's good.
You guys are probably going to get this episode early. You're probably going to get it on Monday instead of Wednesday because I am flying back east to to marry my best friends. As in, I'm officiating the wedding. I'm not part of their marriage. I mean, I guess technically I am part of their marriage now. But, so my two best friends are getting married next Sunday, a week from today. By this point, 2 o'clock, the wedding will have...
Aww.
Oh, God. I have to write an officiant speech and figure all that out. I am certified in the state of Massachusetts. Woo! Only to marry them on that day.
Oh.
It's like a one-time civilian deal thing. Very easy. $20 and you're done.
That's
they send
cool.
you a little certificate. I'll have to show it to you. It's very official.
I do want to see that.
Yeah. And, and then I also am going to be giving a, like, maid of honor speech.
Aww.
So, I have to get up in front of, like, 60 people twice, and I have to be in charge of marrying them. As I was writing, like, stuff and figuring it out, I'm like, I have to, like, tell them to exchange rings and, like, kiss and, like, present them as a couple at the end. And, like, that wasn't in my mind when I first started doing it. I was like, oh, man, there's, like, very important things that I cannot leave out of this. So now I'm, like, freaking out and asking them a million, like, how do you want this done? Because I want it to be done how they want it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like a very traditional wedding, so.
Well, I will tell you, obviously. Because ours came together very last minute. We had a judge marry us. Is actually a friend, like, I went to school with his daughter, and I knew him quite well growing up because his daughter and I were fairly close. We weren't, like, best friends, but I was at their house a lot. And he's a judge in Toledo. We didn't get in touch with him until the week of the wedding. Mm. Like, I kept freaking out because we didn't have anybody to marry us yet, and I was a little worried about how that was all going to go down. And we didn't get in touch till the week of, and I thought he was going to need to, like, meet us, have a bunch of questions, whatever. No. He literally, like, we were going to put together, like, a quick lunch just to sit down for an hour and, you know, say hi and whatever. No, he's like, no, I'm good. As long as I got both of your names and I know that, like, we didn't, because my husband's not particularly religious, we decided to go with, like, a non-religious kind of ceremony. He did do a few little, like, the love Bible verses.
Yeah.
But it was cute. He did a really good job. And he was hilarious. He told
it
jokes.
It was really good.
Yeah, he told jokes and all. He was fantastic.
I got very emotional during the ceremony, which I was not expecting, but I was like, mostly it was the look on your face as you were looking at him, because I was like, oh my God, she loves him so much. And I got really choked up. It was like, I was not expecting that.
But, like, there was no preparation. I had no idea what he was going to do. Like, I generally know what a wedding is like, but I had no idea what he was going to say. It came together very quickly. So, you know, as long as you don't forget the vow part, if they're doing rings, the ring part, and then the pronounce you this, you're good. That's pretty much the highlights.
I think I'm going to tell them, like, most of what it is, but, like, there's a part in the middle where I'm going to talk about, like, love and marriage and, like, kind of like a little bit about their relationship because they've been together for 13 years. Yes. So like it's been a while. And like, I think I'm going to not tell them that part because that's going to be more directed like toward them. And I want that to be a little bit of a surprise. And then the maid of honor speech is going to be like, hey, I've known this person for, you know, 25 plus years. Here are some stories I can tell you.
Oh yeah. That's where you unleash.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the stories.
Hopefully they're like, I think it's going to be different enough that, cause I'm going to be a little funny in the officiant speech, but like mostly it's going to be like love.
Just to keep it light.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of humor to keep things.
And then there'll be some funnier stuff. But not embarrassing, because I wouldn't do that, but...
I'm sure it'll be perfect.
Yeah. It's fine. Everything will be fine.
Absolutely.
Oh my god. Okay. Anyway, so yeah.
If anyone out there has officiated a wedding and has tips for Karen,
please let me know.
Any last minute tips, because she'll edit and post, so you'll see this, and you'll be able to post, you know, on any of our Instagram, I'm sure... I can always be like, hey, Karen, someone actually had, like, a tip. You should know this.
Yeah, so.
I'm sure she would welcome it.
That would be great, actually. you can contact us at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Instagram or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com if you have any advice for me or want to talk about books or Percy Jackson or any of that fun stuff.
Or any of the things we ever talk about, which is pretty much everything.
Yeah, I mean...
TV, movies, books, marriage,
sometimes
whatever.
These intro sections turn into, like, a general update podcast, which I don't mind because... Right.
Hey,
I think it's fun to
We're people and we have all the interests, including Percy Jackson and all things Rick. So, you know.
Yeah. Surprisingly, we do have a few things to talk about during our news and updates section. One very big thing that I'm sure everyone has seen already, but I'm very excited to talk about.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, I just wanted to point out that Leah did win the NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Performance by a Youth, and this was for Percy Jackson, so that is really awesome. Very proud of her. She deserved it. I mean, it
was
incredible.
Yeah.
I also wanted to remind everybody that Sajni Patel's A Touch of Blood is out now. That is the companion novel to A Drop of Venom. And we loved A Drop of Venom, so I don't know when I'm going to read this, but at some point I would like to.
Yeah.
And yeah, so please pick that up. And as always, leave reviews if you can for the books, because that is super, super helpful. The big news, however... that I was not expecting to open Instagram to the other day.
Definitely not.
Was that we are 100% getting a second Nico D'Angelo Will Solace novel. It is called The Court of the Dead. And we already have the title, the cover, the release date, and the synopsis, and an interview with both Mark and Rick. So there's just a lot of stuff to go through, and I'm very excited about it.
Let's go!
Yeah.
Off on an adventure.
So the release date for The Court of the Dead is September 23rd, 2025, and that is for both the US and the UK. Rick said that he doesn't have any of the release dates for other countries right now, so...
Is this going to be, like, a double release, then? Do we have the third, is this going to be a double book fall, or is he going to push off the third,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Do we?
Because we had Chalice of the Gods, and then it was, the second one, Wrath, came out in September.
Yeah.
Of 2024.
Do we have the third one yet?
I don't know.
I don't think we do. So I'm going to say maybe not.
Maybe it'll get pushed a year,
or May. Yeah.
Because usually he does, like, one in the fall, one in the spring. Like, that's Rick's MO, usually.
Although, it might be a year just because with the show and everything, like, you know, they've been busy.
Plus, they do have other projects, you know, in the air that we don't know everything about yet either, so.
Yeah, jeez Louise. but very excited about this. I wanted to read the synopsis. It says, New York Times number one best-selling authors Rick Riordan and Mark Ashiro collaborate again on a new adventure in which Nico D'Angelo teams up with his half-sister Hazel Levesque to protect monsters? A few months after returning from the depths of Tartarus, Nico and Will agree to join Nico's half-sister Hazel Levesque at Camp Jupiter on the West Coast. She needs their help in managing a situation that the boys inadvertently brought about. The demigods showed the monsters of the underworld that they have options. They don't have to be evil. Now, some of those monsters have taken up residence at Camp Jupiter. Nico and Will are on site assisting Hazel with a group of refugees when, one by one, monsters start disappearing from camp. A mysterious dark force is at work, and its plan is to punish all monsters for their past crimes. Things only get worse when Nico, Will, and Hazel learn that they're all connected to it.
That sounds so good.
It sounds really good. Like, really good, because it's connected enough to what happened in the last book, but it's also, like, a whole new dynamic in which the monsters want to be better, and people at Camp Jupiter are, like, trying to help that. Mm-hmm. So, that's really exciting.
Not to mention Hazel.
I know! I love Hazel!
I do love Hazel.
So, that's gonna be really cool.
Yeah.
And there are more thoughts on that. I pulled some stuff from the Cosmopolitan article, the interview between the two of them, that talks about some of this stuff in detail, so we'll get to that in a second. But I also wanted to point out the cover was once again made by Khadija Khatib, who did the last one and has done like some alternate like UK stuff. And I mean, her artwork is incredible. I really love it.
And it looks very cohesive with the first one. Like, it looks like two books that go together. Right. So I was very happy to see that they kept like the fonts the same and like the whole general feel of it feels very similar.
Yeah. And I think the cover is really dynamic, and it also, when I looked closer at it, there were like more details in there than I had realized at first glance, because it's very obvious we see like Hazel, the Minotaur, and Nico and Will on the cover. But then as I kept looking, I noticed like the Minotaur is chained down, and there's some sort of like banister around him, and they're inside a building with like, they're like fire sconces on the wall and stuff, with three people up at the top standing in front of the window, but they're like in silhouette so you can't see who they are. I think it was like two men and a woman. And it almost made me think of like a courtroom, which would make sense because we know the monsters are sort of like being judged and stuff like that. And the Minotaur, you know, has done some pretty terrible things to Percy Jackson and co.
Yeah.
So him being like tied down and maybe getting his sentencing or something like that.
Yeah.
Could be.
Very possible.
Yeah. And that's likely a specific scene from the book. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I also love the cover. I think it's really pretty. It's very purple. So I'm sure you were happy with that.
I mean, love me some purple.
The Cosmopolitan article, which I'll link to in the show notes, was really good. It's a pretty quick read, but there were definitely some like, I love when Rick and Mark are interviewed together because they bounce off each other really well and they're always paying compliments to each other. And they do let like some things slip about this book and the process, which I always find really interesting. I loved that the whole idea started because they didn't include Hazel in the last book and thought about what would happen if they did bring her back for a sequel. This was all pretty much Mark's idea from the beginning. Like, he wanted to fit Hazel into the first book, but there was just literally no room for it.
Which there wasn't. I'm happy to see that she's gonna get, like, a story, like, right, with Nico, but yeah, if you think back to Sun and the Star, like, yeah, there's not a ton of room in that book for Hazel.
And I would rather wait for her to be included in the story in a bigger way than to get, like, a little slice of her in the first book that wasn't that, like, substance.
Yeah, and it gave Nico and Will a chance to really, like, to really focus on them and their relationship and their balance. Mm-hmm. And now that is something we have, we've seen that whole book. Now, like, having that new understanding of Will and Nico and how they work and how that all functions, now taking that to a story where Hazel is a central player will be really interesting. Like, to see how her presence affects their dynamic and, like, else, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm very intrigued to see how this whole thing goes down.
Yeah. And it was really cool because they've talked a few times about how, like, this idea came up when they were on tour during, like, a mic check. And they had mentioned Hazel. And then one thing led to another. And they just kept, like, bouncing ideas off of each other. Then all of a sudden, like, down the road, Mark had written, like, an entire outline and submitted it to Rick. And Rick was like, this is really good. Like, like, I think we're going
to
do this.
Now we have to write this.
Yeah, exactly. And they keep, like, I cannot tell you how many times they describe this book as bonkers. And Mark specifically said when he was, like, writing the outline, like, this is bonkers. Everything about this is bonkers. Rick's definitely going to, like, tame this down a little bit. And then Rick went in and added more things to it and made it even more bonkers. So I can only imagine what this is going to be like. And with, like, more monsters and stuff, that always is a really interesting dynamic between demigods and monsters. And especially with some of them trying to be good.
Right.
I'm so interested in what's going to happen.
Yeah, definitely. Agreed.
Rick also described this book as Will and Nico go to the circus, which I really love.
That's very distinct.
It's just going to be chaos the entire time.
Pretty much, yeah.
Bob and Small Bob will have a moment. We won't see them directly, but their influence is there. Makes me a little sad that we won't see them directly, but
they did have a sizable role in Son of the Star. Yeah. So it makes some sense that we're not, and yeah. Right. But I'm glad they at least have a mention.
And it's basically because of Bob that, like, other monsters feel that they can be good and don't want to be bad anymore. Yeah. So I really love that.
Inspiring that Bob.
Yeah. Mark does have an idea for a third book, and there is one tiny, tiny open thread at the end of book two that they could pull on, but there are no plans right now.
But there were no plans necessarily right at the end of Son of the Star, and look, it's been a year and a half, 2 years, 3 years? 2 years.
I don't. Probably 2 years.
I want to say 2 years. Yeah. And boom, you know, surprise, here's a second book, and it's coming out,
right,
you know, before the end of the year. So yeah, like, it, I wouldn't, if they've got a story, it'll bug them until they write it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I will say, Mark talked at length about how he really likes the pressure of not knowing that there's another book coming, because it kind of forces you to, like, wrap up this entire story in this one book and make it very much like a standalone within this, like, universe. And I also really like that. Like, I love a good series, and I love when there, you know, there's a cliffhanger that makes you want to read to the next book, unless you have to wait 2 years for it. Looking at you, Onyx Storm, Rebecca Yarros. But I really like the idea that these are, like, one-shots in a way. Like, yes, they're connected, but at the same time, if we hadn't gotten anything else after The Son and the Star, I would have felt satisfied.
Same, yeah.
And that makes me feel good.
Yeah, so this is just, like, a really happy bonus, and if they have a third story, it'll be another really happy bonus.
Right.
Yeah.
And I also want to say, I do think we're going to get a third book, probably, if Mark has an idea.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's going to work out. Might be a couple of years, but I think that, I mean, the first book was huge. The first book did really well. I'm sure the second book will do just as well. These two writing together are incredible, mm-hmm. and I am very excited to see more from them. So I would be kind of surprised if there wasn't a third book.
Yeah.
After that, maybe not anymore. I feel like three is always a good number, but yeah, we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, and who knows? They may tackle a different character or something, too.
Right.
Like, you know, Nico has been long awaiting, you know, his story. And so Son of the Star was very highly anticipated because he was the untold story. We needed to know more about Nico. And getting a second book is really great. And the third, if there is one, will be fantastic. But I can see after that, if there's another character that kind of pulls it, one or both of them, that there's a possibility that maybe they take those talents and put them on someone else. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we could really dive deep into this character rather than keeping everything in the Nico area.
I still would love to see Rick team up with specifically the Rick Riordan Presents authors, but any authors willing to do it and write about other characters. Like, getting them, like, you know, Piper, I think, would be an interesting character.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, there's just a lot of them that I feel like could, if you find the right person to represent that character and what they stand for, it's going to be just like this, but...
Yeah. I mean, I'm partial to Frank. I want all the Frank stories. So, right. like, you know, like, I feel like there's a lot of characters that you could do that for, too. Like, especially, like, even Leo and...
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much that could be told that we don't know about these people. So,
yeah.
I agree.
That would be so cool. Man, I mean... It's already bad enough. I already have two dedicated shelves to Rick Riordan, Rick Riordan Presents, with several books hanging out in other places because I don't have room for them right now. And, like, it's only going to get worse in a minute when I tell you about the special editions. But also, like, it's just... I'd never want to leave this world, but at the same time, I'm going to need, a whole bookshelf just to his books.
Yeah. Pretty much.
That's wild. Good for you, Rick, though.
Right? Congratulations.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, half that shelf is, like, RRP.
Right.
But, like, that's still a lot. And, yeah, there are others. I'm staring at her shelf right now, and I'm just going, yeah.
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 I have those special editions over there, yep. which, like...
And stacks on top of the...
Yeah. Those are just...
Standing books.
Willy-nilly. I gotta figure out what to do.
Maybe you just need, like, a long shelf that you can just, like, put all the Rick on a shelf, and then you could have your bookshelf back.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's a good problem to have, though.
It is. Yeah, it really is. We also get to meet Will's mom for the first time. We've never met her before, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Get to see who Apollo fell in love with.
Right.
And then... there's a few other, like, snippets in the article in the interview. I would definitely go read it. Like I said, it's not super long, but it was just nice, like, reading through it. But the last thing that I pulled from it was three words to describe this book. So these were pretty great. Mark says, healing. I think this book is very healing. Shocking. There's a plot twist there people would be very mad about. Interesting. And unhinged. I think this is the most unhinged Percy Jackson book.
That's fantastic.
Love that for you, Mark. I mean...
Bonkers and unhinged.
Yeah. Rick says carnival, because that's the overall feel. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Family, because that is so critical to everything. And I would say food, because there's a lot of great food references. And, you know, being teenagers, it's always on their mind. Who has a better cafeteria, Camp Jupiter or Camp Half-Blood?
Good to know.
Yeah. My money's on Camp Half-Blood just because Camp Jupiter, they kind of live like soldiers. So I feel like that might be a lot more like strict and...
Yeah, and if they're at all, you know, like Roman, like...
Yeah.
It's kind of regimented, like, here's what you're getting today, right. As opposed to, like, Half-Blood, where it's, like, can't you pretty much get whatever you want? Like, I'm trying to think about how food worked at camp.
They have, like, dinners. Usually, doesn't it just appear?
That's when
in front of them? And
yeah.
And, like, I think the kids have, like, kitchen duty and stuff, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, like, I don't think they necessarily all eat the same thing.
Right?
All the time. Yeah, like
it'd probably be, like, buffet style, like a normal high school cafeteria kind of thing. Whereas I feel like, Jupiter, I don't have as much faith in.
Right, yeah. The fact that there's a very regimented, like, soldier-like feel for it makes me think it's more, here's what you get.
Mm-hmm.
Although, if they're all living there and it's more of a college, maybe it's dining halls. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
The college aspect could change that.
Like, the actual camp part might be more, you know, soldier-esque, but New Rome might be more, like, college-y. So, I don't know.
Hmm. Last thing about the books is Rick also put up a blog post on February 28th, and it was basic information about when the book's coming out, the covers, and because, like, the UK cover and the US cover, they're very similar. Like, I think there's a slight color change, but that's pretty much it. And he talked about, like, if you're confused as to, like, why I'm writing this with Mark, and basically, I don't know if it was a copy and paste from when he had talked about this before, but basically the same information about, like, it is not ghostwriting, it is not, you know, him just going over, like, Mark's, you know, final draft or whatever. Like, it's a true collaboration between the two of them. And then he talked a little bit about the special editions, but he had only posted two of them. And if you go to the Reed Riordan Instagram, they have several more that you can see there. And this is what I'm talking about, where I need more room, because I already want all of them because my little completionist heart loves having a full set.
Yeah.
And I'm like debating. I may have already pre-ordered two. I'm debating on more, but not all of them are out yet, which was the other thing. But Waterstones has a version that's like the UK version of the book, and it has stained edges that sort of like match the cover. It looks very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Barnes & Noble, this is the big one, and this is out. You can pre-order this now. Barnes & Noble has the Minotaur like head stamped along the stained edges. There are signed copies available. They have special end papers and an exclusive epilogue. And like, obviously I'm going to get that because I want to know what the epilogue is.
Yeah.
Duh.
Yeah.
This is how they get you. And just for the record, I do not blame Rick for this. He probably had nothing to do with this. This is Disney trying to steal all of our money.
I'm really, really hoping that Barnes & Noble is going to do their pre-order sale again.
They always do that.
I love their pre-order sale, and I'm a Barnes & Noble, like, member. I pay for the membership. So, like, I get, like, triple points, and then I do the pre-orders, and they're 25% off, and I just soak up all the points.
Yeah.
And then I get books randomly throughout the year, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I pre-ordered that.
I know.
It's like a gift to myself that I didn't know I ordered.
Yeah, with, like, several books, and I'm like, I'm going to completely forget I ordered this, and then hopefully don't accidentally order it again.
Right.
So we'll see about that. But Walmart has an exclusive edition. This has, like, the Roman helmet stenciled on the edges, which are also stained. Special end papers. Don't know if they're the same special end papers as the Barnes & Noble one. I would guess maybe they are, but
it's possible. Yeah. It's also possible that they did something similar, but not the same. Yeah.
And then you also get an illustration of the Battle of the Golden Gate Park, which I don't know if that's in color or black and white. It kind of just depends sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Target has one which has like this swirly ombre stenciled edges that are stained, and a poster of Nico, Will, and Hazel's new mythic friends. I also kind of want this one because I do like the idea of the poster. And the ombre edges are very
pretty.
It's
very cool.
Yeah, it goes really well with the book.
Yeah.
But that one, when I looked it up, was not out yet. It was not on their website or anything. So we'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
And Books A Million also has one which has griffins stenciled on the stained edges. And that one I don't think comes with anything special.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I pre-ordered Waterstones and Barnes & Noble. I'm probably going to pre-order Target.
Yeah, my guess is I'll probably pre-order the Barnes & Noble one. I'll wait and see if there's a pre-order sale coming up for Barnes & Noble, 'cause I think they did one in January, but I think they do one every couple of months.
Yeah.
So I'll probably try and wait it out till May or June and see if they do one. But yeah, I'll probably be pre-ordering that too.
Yeah. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
That we know of.
That we know of, plus like a regular book.
Yep.
6. So there's 6 versions floating out there right now. And
plus
then,
there will be a paperback eventually.
Right.
Not right away, but eventually.
Yeah. And, like, who knows if they'll do something else, like...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, the UK right now, I think, only has the one version.
Yeah.
So...
Well, and, like, we got the special Sun and the Star version from the one box.
Yes.
The Rainbow Crate, was it, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So, like, there's always a possibility of something like that, too. Especially thinking... Well, because some of the book boxes did Percy Jackson books this past year.
Yes.
Like, there were a couple of different book boxes
that
did.
Because I think that's where I got those.
Right. And I know, like, I subscribed to Bookish Box for their romance stuff, but I know they had an edition as well this year. Like, a whole set of the original series. So, yeah, there's always a possibility that they throw their own edition in there, you know, if they get rights to it, have a special edition too. So... There's just, it's never ending. You basically, unless you're Karen and you have to have them all, you basically just pick the one you like the most and pre-order it and then try and forget that there are other ones out there. Because in other words, you will be like me and all of the Fourth Wing books and you just see another pretty and then you need it and then you order it and then you realize that you have like 7 copies of the same book.
But you know how I justify this to myself? 99% of the books I read are on Kindle Unlimited.
Yeah.
Like, literally, it's maybe 95. But, like, it's very high. Pretty much only read from Kindle Unlimited. So, like, if I want to buy 3 copies of this book once a year,
right,
I'm allowed to do that. That being said, I did also just buy the special editions of Katie's Neon Gods, the first 5 books. That was expensive. Don't regret it, though, because they're beautiful. And I want things.
And what's our motto? It could be drugs.
I thought it was going to be, if it makes you happy, it's okay. But you're right.
It could be drugs. It could be drugs. It could be something worse. It's books. Yes. These are good for you. It's not a bad thing to own all books.
Supporting authors.
Right.
And art. And important things.
And reading is fundamentally good for you. Whether you're reading nonfiction, fiction, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's good for your brain to imagine these things, and it's good for, you know, if you, as a reader, it helps you as a writer. Like, there's all kinds of benefits to reading.
Yeah.
So, it's a good thing.
And remember that if you ever go to buy any of my books, there are, like, 20 of them. And so,
you can pick a series and then just snowball through it.
I don't have any special editions.
No. Nope.
But
not yet.
Not yet. Maybe someday.
Maybe someday down the line. Once you're, like, the books you're writing now, as much as they're yours, they're not, like, your baby. Yeah. Like, they're characters you've been writing for a long time and that you love. But, like, it's not, like, your Percy Jackson quite yet.
Yeah.
But I feel like maybe someday when you write your Percy, maybe we can figure out how to get Karen into the special edition.
Yeah, that would be really
exciting. Make them all pretty.
I know.
Oh my god, that would be so cool.
That would be cool. Okay. So that was the end of the news. Very, very excited about this book.
Yes.
And really, maybe I'm just older and wiser now, but September doesn't feel that far away.
It doesn't.
Like, it's March now.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that I can wait that long.
Right.
I've got plenty of other things to do in the meantime.
Well, and I was going to say, in the meantime, we're going to eventually be tackling Red Pyramid, and then who knows what we'll be up to by then.
I mean, yeah.
We could definitely take on Wrath of the Triple Goddess, or, depending on the timing, we could just step right into that one and then get to Wrath of the Triple Goddess.
I was going to say, or we could go chapter by chapter through Son of the Star, because we haven't done that.
We have not done that.
We just discussed it.
We did,
but
which we can always do that too.
Yeah, because I would totally reread that.
I mean, it's been a while. Definitely.
And that would be fun to do right before Court of the Dead, so. Mm-hmm.
Definitely something to think about.
Yes.
Yes.
Kristen has her evil.
Please let us know if this is something you want us to do, because I know it's something you want us to do.
Like, you were doing your, like, evil
finger twiddling, I guess, would be.
I don't really know.
It's just thoughts. It's thinking. Yes. Yeah. Okay, all right. How do we do this? We can make this work. Yes. No, we'll have to discuss that. And, let us know if there's something specific about Sun and Star or Court of Nightmares or anything that you want us to look at.
Yeah, for sure.
And now, we have to discuss the last 2 chapters of Chalice of the Gods.
I'm so happy.
We did it! Yeah, I know.
I'm proud of us.
It's exciting. Like, we're finally here.
Yeah.
It was a long time coming.
It was. I feel good about this new era of the podcast and us, like, taking our time and, you know.
Yeah, me too. Honestly,
stressing about it. It's been so great.
It's been really great. Yeah. Yes, I agree. Okay, so yes, we are discussing Chalice of the Gods chapters 34 and 35. Chapter 34 is entitled, I Write the Worst Letter Ever, Delete, Delete.
This was the best running joke through an entire chapter I think I ever remember in a Percy Jackson book.
I'm personally quite fond of it as well. I was curious if we, after reading the last chapter and, like, the letter, knowing that Percy has to, like, write this letter. First of all, I was curious if we were gonna see him write the letter in the book, or if it was just gonna be, like, a passing, like, that was a pain in my ass, but I did it, and it's done, you know? Like, he may just pass it off. I'm so glad we got to see the mechanics of how writing this letter works. Yes. Because this chapter was delightful.
It really was.
And I was a little curious how you write a letter on this, like, magical paper and how, like, how that whole process was going to work. So, yes, I was thoroughly amused by this
Percy
chapter.
Was really curious, too, because he had no idea.
He had no clue. And I love how he just guesses.
Ganymede didn't leave him with any instructions because that would be too easy.
Nope. And he just takes a wild shot and says, maybe this will work. And it does.
Sort delete, of, delete.
Kind of. Delete, delete. Okay. So, this chapter begins with Percy, Sally, Paul, and Annabeth all at Percy's apartment, Percy's house with his parents. And they're having spaghetti, and Annabeth and Percy have chopped veggies for the salad, and they have garlic bread, and it sounds yummy. He does make a reference to the spaghetti situation. Mm-hmm. I forget which book that was from. It's been a minute.
This one.
Was it this one?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, but it was the first half of the
it's
book.
It's been so long.
Yeah.
I thought it was, and I was like, wait, maybe
that was, like, with Ellison and the caves and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes so much more sense. But yeah, we got a reference to the spaghetti situation from earlier in the book. But it, you know, you give it another try. It eventually it grows on you. It's spaghetti. Yeah. Come on. I did love that Paul turns some jazz on during the meal on his turntable. Paul is such, he gives me, whatchamacallit, hipster.
Yeah, like, a little bit.
Like, he's a teacher, and he's very earnest about that, and I love that about him, but everything else in his life, I feel like he wants to be cool.
I also feel like this is a little bit a stand-in for Rick. Like, I kind of just feel like I get Rick vibes from him a lot, especially when he was talking about telling, like, stories from his class and stuff. I'm like, Rick does that all the time.
Right. Yeah, so they, at dinner, they take turns talking about their day. Paul tells funny stories about his classes, which I'm sure are thoroughly entertaining. Sally talks about her upcoming book and how it got its first one-star review, which I loved that he included this in this as well, because the one-star review, the art of the one-star review, especially the one-star review that comes before your book is ever released.
And I hate when people do that. They'll, like, review it as one star and say, I haven't read this yet, but I'll update this when I read it. That's not how that's supposed to work.
No. Nope.
Like, what are you doing?
Not at all. Not
chaos gremlin.
Like, no, you do not need to be first to put a review up. That is not a thing.
Oh
no.
God.
You putting a one star on it to start does nothing but hurt the author, the book, whatever. It's terrible. Don't do it. But yeah, I loved that Sally not only reports that this has happened, but also goes on to tell Percy that, like, it's fine. I think it's hilarious. I may frame it. But yes, this one-star review, the reviewer didn't like that the title Love Songs of the Gods promoted paganism.
Because that is, like, I bet this is a real one-star review for Percy Jackson.
Probably. If it's not, I'd be shocked.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that exactly is the kind of thing I expect.
Also, what kind of book is this? Like,
I know, right?
Is this a romance? Is this, like, a fantasy?
Is it, like, short stories? Love Songs of the Gods. Like, is she writing a bunch of, like, short stories?
Yeah.
You know?
I can Rick actually write this book so we can find out? Because that would be great.
Is it... I'm assuming these are, like, Greek god stories, or is this something else? Like,
I would assume
what is
Greek
Sally
gods,
writing?
Yeah.
That's what we need to know. Percy did offer to talk to the Queen of the Amazons, who just so happens to be the fearsome monarch of online retailing, to have it taken down, but Sally, of course, decided to frame it, which I think is the move. Annabeth tells the tales of all of the latest adventures. I kind of love that Percy let her just kind of take the reins on this. Give her the task of parsing down the scary bits for Sally and Paul. It was well done on Percy's behalf. Let Annabeth handle that. Sally is pretty old hat at this point, though, so she can read between the lines and kind of sense where the actual danger was, because when you're a demigod and you're dealing with other gods and monsters, there's always danger.
Yeah.
She's better. She knows better. Sally goes on to find out about Percy and Garrus, even if it's a parsed down, you know, version of the story. And Sally mentions how impressed she is that Percy embraced old age. She, of course, says it with a little bit of a jokey manner, but it's really just sweet that Sally, like, is as proud of him as she is. I just love it about her.
Yeah, Callie loves it, too. She has once again joined us.
And I had to point out, I love that Percy was more excited to get compliments about being Sally-like than he does about being Poseidon's kid and, like, being Poseidon-like. Like, getting a compliment about being, like, Sally Jackson is special.
He loves his mom so much.
He does. And it's so sweet. I just love them and their relationship so much. It's delightful. I love it. Mm. Annabeth asks Percy about brunch. And Percy pretty much downplays it and says, like, oh, it was fine. I got Ganymede the chalice. All was well. He gave me the piece of paper. I'll show you later. You know, and Annabeth sort of, like, tries to needle him for more. And he gives her, like, the later.
Yeah.
Don't do it. I can't tell you here. Like,
that's... Because she knows it wasn't that easy or straightforward.
Like, no, definitely not, especially if Zeus is involved. So, yeah. Percy kind of, you know, gets her to let it go so that he doesn't have to try and give any of that information to Paul and Sally, which I don't blame him because that was definitely strange and complicated. Once dinner's over and the table is clear, they want to keep the special paper free of spaghetti sauce stains, of course. Percy gets the letter out and he lays it on the table for all of them to take a look at. I loved that Percy's, like, first instinct is, so, Paul, if a student gave you a essay on this paper, would you read it or would you just give him an A because it's pretty? And Paul's pretty quickly is like, no dice. Yeah. Like, I would read it and you'd have to earn your grades. Like, sorry. I love that Percy asks this because you know he's thinking, like, he's like, I could just write nothing.
Is this,
like,
an option?
Right. Like, I could write basic nonsense and no one's going to read it because it looks impressive, right? And Paul's like, no, you should probably pay
attention. I wonder if anybody ever did that to Rick, like, handed an essay on really fancy paper.
And it's just like, meow, 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 meow. Like, something dumb or, like, it's like...
Callie, were you in Rick's class? Is that your essay?
It could be.
It's your favorite word.
Exactly. That was on cue. Very good job.
We are impressed. Super impressed. Percy then goes on to explain what Ganymede told him about the letter and how he needs to write it himself. Paul kind of infers that the gods are lazy, kind of as an insult. And Percy tells him, don't worry. Paul worries a little bit about being, like, smited because of that. And Percy's like, no. They'll take that as a compliment, trust me. Like, yeah. If the gods can be lazy, if they can find ways to be lazier, they will absolutely do it. And they're proud of themselves for it. So, love that. So, they're standing around the table and they're trying to kind of puzzle out how to start this nonsense. And Percy says, well, I wonder if I just say, dear admissions office. And as he says that, the print starts to, like, write itself in a pretty cursive script on the page. So, the paper has been activated now. And as Percy doesn't know the rules to how this works, he, of course, starts, like, talking about what's going on, and it gets dictated onto the paper.
He says, oh, crap.
And then delete, 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 delete. And thank God that works. So you can delete on magical paper, which I thought was pretty fascinating.
I mean, it'd be a little bit silly if you couldn't. It's magic.
I mean, yeah. I do love that delete is the word, not something else or, you know, it's nothing Greek. It's just the word delete. So everybody takes turns giving Percy phrasing and ideas for things that should go into this letter. And every time they give him something, they tack something silly or super sweet or very specific about, like, chopping vegetables to the end of this. So he keeps having to edit backward and fix the end of phrases. And I just thought this was so family.
Yeah.
Like, it's so unbelievably family. If my family was tasked with helping me write this letter, this is exactly what would happen. Yeah. My brothers would be standing behind me saying, but, you know, like, they would be trying desperately to get some ridiculous word into this thing that while I don't notice so that it ends up staying.
Right.
I love the family of it all. I love watching these four joke around and Annabeth rolling on the floor with laughter. It's so perfect.
I wonder if she, like, because she's so serious all the time, like, she probably feels such relief around, like, Percy and his family, and, like...
It's just such a casual, comfortable environment that they can just chill.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. It's so lovely for them. Percy even includes a line about Eudora being helpful, which I thought was perfect.
Yeah, I'm actually a little surprised he did that, but also not, because he probably, you know, wanted to at least try to get it in there.
Right. As they're trying to wrap it up, Percy finishes the letter with, "Thank you for your time. Yours sincerely, Ganymede." And the paper stops dictating and Ganymede's signature glows red. So it gives you that final stamp of, yep, Ganymede approves and all is well.
I forgot. That's right. Like, it would have to be basically approved, so.
Because Ganymede said, like, you can write it, and as long as it's something that I would say, it will, my signature will appear. So I was very relieved for him when Ganymede's signature appeared. I mean, he was pretty honest and, like, he was obviously complimentary, but it seemed pretty good.
We didn't really get, like, what the whole letter actually was. Actually, I think in one of the editions, I think you actually get it in the back.
Oh. BRB. I have a copy, just not with me. But Karen has hers.
This one has the sun and the star first chapter in the back.
Was it a separate thing in the front? Like, actually tacked to the inside of the...
I think I remember something being, like, tacked inside.
Yeah.
Do I have another version of this?
Yes. There's two more that I see. It might be.
Or...
It might be the UK one. Pause while we look.
Yes. The Barnes & Noble exclusive.
Okay, so if you want to read the full letter in the Barnes & Noble exclusive edition of Chalice of the Gods, it is... like, sticky tacked to the back cover. So if you do not own a copy of this book and you specifically want to read the letter, you can.
And it's probably online somewhere, too.
I mean, to be honest, yes, probably.
Oh, wait, this is not...
Scratch that.
Interesting. So, this is from Apollo, Greek god of the sun.
Okay.
For Percy Jackson.
Interesting.
And there's more on the back. One from Delphin.
Are we supposed to know this?
He's like the Greek god of dolphins.
Yes. I mean, like, are we supposed to know all of these letters?
Because I don't know, because...
spoilers.
Aristaeus, the Greek god of crafts, cheese, and beekeeping.
Interesting.
I don't know Perry Jason all that well. That's so funny. So these are recommendation letters, but they're not the recommendation letters?
Just kidding. Sorry, Karen.
How many does he need?
I don't know. He needed three. He needed three. There are three on that piece of paper, and none of them are the one he just wrote, so.
Maybe they'll tell us in Triple Goddess?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Why would you include that with Chalice of the Gods,
though? I was really hoping that was going to be Ganymede's letter.
Yeah, me too.
Now I'm confused. Oh, well.
I'm so sorry about all of that chaos.
I was also standing across the room as I said all that, so hopefully the audio is fine.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
So yes, they finish dictating and the paper stops dictating all the words Percy's saying, and he feels 100% relieved, as I would, because that could go on and become a real problem. After they have finished the letter, they toast to Percy, their family hero, but it's a little too soon for toast for Percy, and he makes a comment about how he's not going to take part.
Yeah.
And that is pretty much that chapter, so now we'll pop into our favorite lines and our favorite moments. Karen, what was your favorite line?
Mine was the spaghetti situation, which was, and yes, after the horned serpent incident, I'd sworn off spaghetti, but pasta is like a best friend. You can't stay mad at it forever. And like a truer statement has not been made.
I mean, it's true. It's very, very true. Well, my favorite line was, it was kind of something that Percy was talking to himself about, and he says, well, 4 and a half of us, I had to keep reminding myself that my mom was expecting a little mortal bundle of Jackson Blowfish. I just loved the little mortal bundle. Yeah. It made me happy. It's so cute. And I love how excited he is to be a big boy. It's really just precious. Okay, and then our favorite moments. Karen, what was yours? What is your name? Karen. Karen, what was yours?
Mine was Sally loving her one-star review that love songs of the gods promotes paganism, because as a writer, we all have those one-star reviews. And like, at first, I will say, one-star reviews usually don't hurt my feelings because it's like, clearly this book was not made for this person. It's like the 3-star ones or the 2-star ones that like have legitimate criticisms of your writing. You're like, well, that's just rude. How dare you have a valid point? Whereas one stars are usually like, this is the worst book I've ever read. No, it's not.
Yeah.
I mean,
it just wasn't for you.
Yeah.
And that's
and my one star review that we bring up all the time, like my boyfriend, his brother, he brings it up all the time, is for the Cassie Quinn series, which is a paranormal mystery thriller. The person wrote, this is nothing like Jack Reacher. And it's like, yeah, it wasn't supposed to be.
like, someone somewhere must have described it to her as Jack Reacher-esque somehow.
Yeah, I think in the beginning, maybe, like, Lee had kind of pitched it as Jack Reacher, but with ghosts.
Right.
Which, like, it wasn't really supposed to be like that, but that might have been, like, very early marketing of it or something.
And it's a super basic way to be, like, it's kind of like an action, you right. know, military thriller-esque yeah. kind of book, but it also has this paranormal element. Yeah. So, no, it's not Jack Reacher.
But we bring that up all the time, and I honestly laugh about it. Like, that one's never hurt my feelings because it's so ridiculous, but I do remember a 3-star review where somebody was like, here are all the things that I feel like this book wasn't that great at, and I was like, that's all super valid, and I'm really mad about it.
I feel like the art of the terrible 1-star review has become something to appreciate.
Yeah.
Like, the internet has taken it as one of those things, like, it's now a badge of honor to get a yeah. ridiculous, completely off-the-wall 1-star review. So, it's now become, yeah, it's a fun
like
thing.
I feel like the older I get and the more I, like, interact with the outside world, the more I realize people, as in general, are not very smart. And they're not... They don't really think about other people yeah. like I do. Like, I'm very aware of what other people are feeling to a fault. That is not a good thing. Usually it's a bad thing for me. But, like, I feel like I'm very aware of, like, how the people around me are feeling and, like, making sure they're okay. A lot of people are not like that. And so you kind of have to just be like, you know, if this was on a diagram of, like, data points, like, those are the people on the periphery that, like, you kind of have to cut from it because they're
the Russian skating judges. You have to lop off their scores. It's true. In figure skating, you lop off the Russian score because they're always extreme unless it's a, if it's a Russian skater they're judging, then it's really high. If it's anyone else, it's really low. So you'd always just lop them off.
I'm going to think of it that way from now on. That is so funny.
But it's true. It's super yeah. true. My favorite part was Paul, Sally, and Annabeth taking turns being silly because, as I said before, it's just really, really nice in this book and in this, hopefully, you know, trio of books to kind of get these softer moments mm-hmm. where Percy just gets to be a kid and has yeah. some moments to just enjoy his family and doesn't have the world on his shoulders.
Yeah, I mean, after everything he had just been through, to get picked on like this from his girlfriend and his parents, like, it was really cute, and you could tell he loved it, even if he was like, oh. But, like, you know, they were saying nice things about him and stuff. They were just being silly.
Right,
just
exactly. Like,
yeah, a normal day.
And the more I think about it, Rick could have stopped this book at the chapter before, at 33, because Percy's back in class. He's feeling, like, relieved to be in class, and he didn't do the work, but he knows, you know, what to expect being in the classroom and right. being at peace. So, like, Rick could have just chopped it off there and said, this is it, we're done. Mm-hmm. But instead, he decided to give us this chapter about the family and seeing the family mm-hmm. kind of get back on the same page about what's going on in each other's lives. And we also get chapter 35 that we're going to talk about now
yeah.
With Percy and Annabeth, just kind of as a lovely little way to round off this book.
It was a super short chapter, but yeah. I did feel like it was necessary to just, like, as, like, an end cap to the story. It worked really well.
Absolutely, yeah. I just really, really love the simplicity of the end of this book here, because mm-hmm. there's not an added wrinkle, there's no extra little things. This is just Percy's day-to-day, and we're getting a little taste of, like, how he gets through a day and how he does his homework and what dinner is like.
Again,
and
another series where Rick wasn't sure he was going to write another book. And so we know that there are other letters, which is, maybe that's why we have the other letters in those that book. Like, he wasn't sure he was going to write a sequel yet.
Which is possible.
Yeah. So is that not canon? I don't know. I need to know the answers.
Well, because one of those wasn't Ganymede. So
exactly.
What do we do about that?
It's very confusing.
Yeah. So I love that even though we know there could be more adventures for him to get other recommendation letters, this was a complete book. There really, there's no cliffhanger here.
No.
Like, it was finished by the end of the chapter.
Yeah. Okay, so now we'll dive into chapter 35, entitled Pretty Much the Best Goodnight Kiss Ever. So after dinner, Annabeth heads back to her dorm. She's got homework to do and things to work on. Percy goes to his room to work on his homework and eventually gets tired of it. And Iris messages Annabeth to talk, especially since he wanted to tell her about brunch. When Annabeth picks up, he talks about this intimate smile. Like, it's a really warm, special smile that he says, like, he feels like it's just for him. And I have to say, like, it made me swoon. Like, as much as I've read and reread Percy and Annabeth's moments from all the different books so many times now, that it's really sweet to get this kind of thing where they have a moment and he recognizes that there's a special smile that she only really gives him. And it's just cute.
This chapter was very swoon-worthy. It was very much like about their relationship and how serious they are about each other. And I really loved it.
Yeah. So then Percy goes on to tell her about what happened on Olympus. He starts with Barbara's request for a selfie and an autograph from Annabeth, and she is very happy to provide it.
Like no question, no confusion, like...
She's just like, oh yeah, absolutely.
And Percy's like, how often does this happen to her? Like, he's so confused.
Like, is this like a regular thing?
Yeah.
And she does not really...
I love that she just goes with it.
Right? It's too great. He also thanks her for loaning him the Yankees cap and mentions to her how he didn't know how uncomfortable it was to wear the Yankees cap. Like, she's never mentioned it. And Annabeth talks about what wearing the cap means, like what her mom has told her about it. And she says, she has this phrase, all power has a price.
Mm-hmm.
And the price of being invisible and wearing that cap is that it's physically uncomfortable. And that's a price that she's accepted when it's necessary. And I just really loved that little bit of something from Annabeth about her mom. Like, these are things that we've never known. Like, Annabeth and her cap are a regular, you know, presence throughout all the stories, and she's never once mentioned it.
Yeah.
So to get those details now, it really does add a lot.
Shh. We're recording.
You're disrupting.
We're almost done. I know.
Yeah, she discusses how, you know, it's a lesson her mom taught her, and it's something that she definitely carries with her all the time. Percy then goes on to talk about Athena's part in brunch, especially that look under the table. And Annabeth kind of goes quiet for a minute and doesn't really have, like, a strong response at first. And then answers with, wow. And I just loved that Annabeth is a little bit speechless at this. We quickly learn that it's because she's kind of processing that Athena seems to have accepted how serious Annabeth is about Percy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's causing seaweed brain, which I love. But yeah, I thought this was kind of, this was an important step. Athena kind of accepting it, helping Percy without Annabeth present. She really is seeing how important this person is to her daughter. And I like that as progress for Annabeth and Athena.
And I even kind of like that it's almost reluctant, but also at the same time, almost like it's not that Athena is disappointed in Annabeth. It's just like she's accepting it in a way, not necessarily where she like respects Percy more, but she's also like, maybe you're not as terrible as I thought you were, you know?
Like, I guess if you're going to be around, I can put up with it.
Yeah.
Like, you could be worse, I guess, maybe. Percy is momentarily touched by this fact, by the realization that Athena may be coming around a little bit. And I love that it manifests as, like, a tightness in his chest. Well, you know, it's that feeling when you get like good news, but it's good news that you didn't expect. But I just thought it was funny that it was tightness in his chest, because usually that's a bad sign.
Yeah.
Things then move on to discussions about their hopeful future. It's really nice to see that Percy and Annabeth have similar ideas about the future. Annabeth kind of talks about how she wants, what she hopes their future looks like. And we already know what Percy hopes their future looks like and what they're planning. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to know that single-handedly they both have this vision of, we're getting through whatever else there is waiting for us, and we're gonna get to being old and gray and rocking chairs on, you know, on the porch. Like, it's gonna happen. And I loved this bit, just kind of giving us a minute to accept that they're both envisioning that life.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also tells Annabeth all about what he saw with Garrus and what he pictured. And Annabeth tears up, because of course she did.
Yeah.
She then reminds Percy that he does need 2 more letters of recommendation before winter break. And he mentions it's easy queasy, which we'll get to the rest of that quote, because I quite enjoyed it. But yeah, I just love that he references it as easy queasy, because
yeah,
that makes a lot of sense.
I'm going to use that from now on.
I mean, especially if it's something you're not looking forward
yeah
to.
I feel very easy queasy about this wedding coming up.
It's a good phrase. It's a good phrase.
Yeah.
Gotta love Rick. Annabeth also tells Percy that she loves him. And then he tells her he loves her, too. Is this the first time that they've legitimately, like, said it in a book?
I
couldn't remember.
I don't think so, but
it,
I don't know.
It felt significant.
It did. I will say that, yeah.
I don't know if this is... It might be the first time that we... Like, the first time chronologically... That we experienced them saying it. Because I don't think
right
they said it in the first series.
No.
Because they aren't quite there yet. And considering where this falls in that whole tale.
Yeah.
I feel like this might be chronologically the first time that we're being privy to this.
Okay, so yeah, we looked it up because we couldn't remember. This does take place after Heroes of Olympus. So I think they may have said, I love you, during Heroes of Olympus. Because, like, he went missing. So, like, that,
right,
I feel like that would kind of fall into place and make sense. But you're right. I mean, I still feel like this was, like, it felt significant for some reason.
It did. It just had this extra punch.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's the first time they've said it, because they felt very, like, comfortable. It wasn't like,
it
weird.
Wasn't, yeah.
But it just, it felt so comfortable and normal for them
to say.
Maybe
it's still just new.
Yeah. I do think it's not, yeah, I definitely think it's newer. It's not, you know, old hat at this point,
yeah,
but it did feel, like, not uncomfortable or not, like, they weren't nervous about saying it to each other. It just felt sweet and very Percy and Annabeth. What can you say?
Yeah.
Annabeth then also reminds him to go finish his homework, and she signs off. And I kind of loved that at the end of this, Percy thought he could smell her presence there at the end.
Yeah.
They both reach out toward the iris message and, like, pretend to hug, and that's how they break it up. And again, it sounds like this is a, like, regular thing. When he iris messages her from his room, this is how they end their calls, is with this, like, almost hug. And it's just so friggin' cute. And it made me wonder why the chapter was talking about a goodnight kiss.
Right.
When it's, like, this goodnight hug, almost.
Yeah.
But I think it's that, basically, that closeness. It's, like, it's the best way to end a day.
Yeah.
And I can definitely understand that. Percy then falls asleep because, schoolwork, whatever. And he has pleasant dreams for once.
Yay! I'm sure that won't last long, but yay!
No, but we love it. Okay, and that takes us to our favorite lines for this chapter. So, Karen, what was yours?
Mine was when Annabeth was describing, like, what their future would look like. And I think she said something like, we're going to have lots of fun first, and then we're going to settle down, and, like, everything will be fine. And Percy goes, you had me at fun. Actually, you had me at the whole thing. I thought that was so cute.
They're so cute. And then mine was Percy saying, easy queasy. And Annabeth says, you mean peasy. And he says, no, I'm pretty sure it makes me queasy, but we'll make it, right?
That is really great.
It's just them. And then our favorite moments. Karen, what was yours?
Mine was the way they goodnight kiss or hug or whatever through the iris message. That was just so cute. I love that, like, even though they can't be together, that's, like, the closest they can get. And the fact that Percy, a teenage boy, is, like, that sappy about his girlfriend is just so cute to me.
If it hadn't been clear that it was the end of the book and that there was one line left after that, pretty much, I almost, with the way he said that he could, like, almost smell her and, like, you know, I thought maybe she was, like, closer than he thought. Like, yeah. I know the iris message was, like, in her room or whatever. I was like, did she secretly figure out a way to, like, get there? And she was gonna, like, take her cap off and, like, tackle him or something, you know? Like, I kind of wondered for a second, and I was like, if there was more, if there was another chapter, or if, you know, it wasn't clearly about to end, I would have thought that was a possibility, because it just, it did, it felt so close. It felt like they were so close in that moment. My favorite moment was Annabeth tearing up, hearing about Percy's vision while he embraced Garrus. I really loved them kind of touching base and really feeling that they have the same vision for how they want their life to go and their future to go. And it was just really cute. And, or it also could have been just Annabeth telling Percy that she loves him, because that was really sweet too.
Yeah.
So I just love all the moments, all the Percy-beth.
Like I said, this chapter is so short, but, like, it's so cute. And there's just a lot of moments between them here.
Yeah. Agreed. And that pretty much wraps up Chalice of the Gods.
It does. It's done now.
It's been a long road, but I'm so glad we came back and got a chance to finish it.
I was going to ask you how you felt about the book, but I think it's pretty obvious how we both feel about the book.
So I mean,
it was a great addition to this whole universe.
So different from any of the Percy books we've gotten so far. But again, yes, so welcome. A lot of fun to see a story a little different and a little lower stakes and a little less intense. But every bit is entertaining and every bit is lovely, and getting to see more moments between the trio is delightful on my end. So yeah, I really enjoyed this book. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Instagram at Prophecy Radio Podcast, or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and that is super helpful. We don't have any feedback this week, but we look forward to hearing from you guys next time. So feel free to reach out in any of the ways, and we'll definitely keep an eye out for you guys for next time. I believe we will be taking a look at where we left off from Red Pyramid, doing a little review so that we can jump right into that. And Karen will be back from her trip. Yes. So I'm sure she'll have all kinds of fun wedding-related stories to tell.
Hopefully they're fun and not embarrassing.
They're going to be fun. That wedding's going to be a blast.
I forgot to bring the certificate, and you're not legally married now.
Sorry. No, it's going to be fine. Do you want me to text you on Tuesday morning and be like, Karen, do you have your certificate?
I'm making a packing list, and that's literally, like, at the top of the list, because I cannot forget that.
Absolutely.
I actually could. It would be fine. I would just have to mail it to them, and that makes me nervous.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I won't
forget. It'll be good. So, until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.